This is an ABC podcast.
When you were growing up, who taught you about sex and puberty?
When I was young, my dad was my educator. He taught me about puberty, the different stages that I would went through before I become a young lady.
Some girls learn about these things from their mothers. Others learn about it at school. But Azel Zege's father taught her about sex because he wanted his daughter to understand some of the risks.
Like, for example, when you have your period, that's the time when you will get pregnant. He used to tell me that don't allow anyone touch your body parts, like your private parts, and this is not allowed. I was really curious at that time, and I used to ask him a lot of questions.
How old were you when your father began to have those conversations with you?
Since I was like 8 years old, he used to like explain things in simple ways.
She may not have known it when she was 8 years old, but as Azel grew up, she realized how important her father's lessons were.
Well, listen, I was really blessed. Like, my dad taught me well. How to appreciate my body, how to look after my body, how not to give in to anyone. I was really blessed that I know these things when I was still a teenager.
In the Pacific, sex is a big taboo, especially when it happens before marriage. But clear, open, and honest discussions about sex and puberty can benefit everyone. It can reduce unplanned pregnancies, sexually transmitted illnesses, and even sexual assaults. I'm Hilda Wayne. Sisters, let's talk about sex. Whether or not you want to admit it, when adolescents go through puberty, most, if not all of them, start to get curious about sex. So it's vital that they learn about their own bodies, their partner's bodies, and how to have safe sex. And you can do that while still encouraging them to abstain. But the UNAIDS country director in Fiji, Dr. Renata Rem, says despite high rates of HIV and unplanned teenage pregnancies, the need for sex education is still being ignored.
To be honest, sexual health in the last 10 years has really dropped off most of the radars of ministries of health throughout the Pacific because it was no longer a sexy issue with donors. And so the focus on sexual health has really dropped in terms of support being given from international communities and countries taking on their own leadership in this area. Now, given the state of how sexual health education is playing out in the Pacific, we have high STI rates, increasing HIV rates, increasing unplanned teenage pregnancies, and the list goes on. And another worrying thing is the low condom use throughout the Pacific.
What needs to be done at a community, national and regional level to change this?
Commitment by governments and also community leadership is needed to really push out more comprehensive sexual education. And understanding that the cultural perception of sex in the Pacific, it's a very taboo subject. This makes our work in terms of awareness campaigns and so on very challenging. Given that unsafe sex practices is the main mode of HIV transmission and other STIs as well, we really need to embrace having these sexual health conversations and see it as any other health advice. We should take away, you know, the traditional emphasis on abstinence and the negative consequences of sex. And this really discourages young people from talking about sexual health or even reaching out for sexual health information. But by providing young people with information to make better, empowered, and safer choices, and having these conversations within families, schools, it prevents young people from finding answers in places which can fuel misinformation on sexual health. You know, young people are especially curious, and sexual health is a part of the process of maturing as an adult. And so shying away from the subject matter is doing more harm than good.
Renata advocates for comprehensive sexuality education, a program teaching young people about respectful relationships as well as safe sex.
This is a program that's really spearheaded by UNFPA, and UNAIDS supports this method of teaching. So what it actually encompasses is not just talking about sexual education, but looking at relationships as well, which is very important when it comes to sex, and taking on the topic in a manner that is positive, affirming, and really centered on the best interest of a young person. You know, it also outlines the essential components of effective sexual education, sexuality education. And it looks at the emotional and the physical, as well as social aspects of sexual health. It equips young people with knowledge, skills, and attitudes and values that will empower. So empowerment and sexual health goes hand in hand and is very important. And this empowerment helps young people consider how their choices affect their own health, well-being, and that of others, and to also understand and ensure the protection of their rights throughout their lives. And so health education goes beyond reproduction, risk, and disease. And it also covers gender equality and, most importantly, respect and values. And this is something that we really truly need to embrace here in the Pacific.
But she says not enough schools are embracing this type of sex education program.
There are some elements of comprehensive sexuality education which are covered in schools, but unfortunately, this is mostly seen as an optional subject. And many young people feel awkward having these classes as well, because you don't have dedicated teachers who are well-versed in the subject. So it's not really a safe space. And so in many cases, you would have your maths or your science teacher taking the class. And this really discourages young people from actually attending this subject, especially when you make it optional. So the Pacific has a long way to go in terms of implementing a comprehensive and a full package of this sexuality health education.
And as you said, it's a taboo subject. If there's a parent or grandparent listening, how do they start talking to the young people? Where do they start?
You know, it's about having a safe space for young people, and also thinking of their sexual health as any other part of their body, like how they would give advice for healthy eating, about being more active physically, about your mental health. Sexual health should just be an add-on on health advice. And, you know, in terms of young people coming into adulthood, this actually helps a young person to be well prepared with the decisions that can really impact their life. Say, for example, a young girl who lacks the proper knowledge about protecting herself from pregnancies and sexual infections, having that conversation and saying that this is how you protect yourself, this is what you do, I'm here, I'm available to talk to you, can really help them prevent choices that would impact the entirety of their adulthood.
When young people are armed with knowledge, what impact does that have on their lives, particularly girls and women?
Knowledge is power. And so they have control when to negotiate safe sex, which is very important for young women nowadays, given that condom use is very low in the Pacific, given that men mostly find it, or well, just have this myth that it's not pleasurable. And so having this knowledge empowers them to have the negotiating power, make better choices for themselves, and also acknowledging the fact that some STIs affect women more than it affects men. Take, for example, for HPV. this is sexually transmitted and this affects women through cervical cancer, whereas men don't get this. So it's about having that information to know that by making healthier choices, they're protecting their sexual health and also protecting themselves into coming, you know, having unplanned pregnancies. And given the services that are available for not keeping pregnancies in the Pacific is not very supportive, having that prevention knowledge would really help them in the future.
There is this perception that if you talk about sex, your kids will have sex. And this isn't just in the Pacific. What is the actual truth behind this?
That's a myth that's been circulating for a very long time.
And what is the cost when there is a lack of knowledge?
The cost of the lack of knowledge impacts on our family, on social services, and the health systems. This is when you have unplanned pregnancies. This is when sexual infections come up. They become ill. They, in most cases, would need to seek more health services. Say, for example, a person living with HIV, once they become infected, and they would need to frequently go to the clinics in terms of treatment. And this is a lifelong affair. So if governments don't invest in proper sexual health education, this will be a burden on the health system. And also, say, for example, for young people who have unplanned pregnancies, many young people may not be financially stable to look after children. So this becomes another burden to the social services of a country. So in terms of the financial implications of sexual education, of not absence of sexual education, these are some of the areas that could be vastly impacted.
That's Renata Ram from UNAIDS in Fiji.
This is Sisters Let's Talk with Hilda Wayne.
So what are those sex education classes like? Primrose Famana is the youth nursing officer in charge of Papua New Guinea's Family Health Association. She runs sex education classes for a range of age groups.
We have like the lower primaries, the upper primaries, the tertiary and the high school. So for the lower primary schools, we basically talk about like body changes and all that, like puberty. And we have seen that there are some students that are in upper primary that have their like first sexual contact. So we also address that in the upper primary level. And for like tertiary or high schools, we talk to young girls especially about like, because they are already like seeing the menstruation and they can now get pregnant. We talk to them about how to avoid unwanted pregnancy. We talk to them about like relationships. We talk to them about like sexual abuse. Sexual abuse is an issue, is a topic that we talk to students right across the, like everyone from like lower primary up to tertiary institutions.
And what are some of the most interesting or surprising questions you've been asked?
One of the questions that I get asked most frequently was, how do I know, like especially for the young girls, is how do I know if my body is like, if I can get pregnant, if my body's ready to house a child? Most of them are still confused in that. So yeah, what we basically tell them is as soon as you start seeing your menstruation, that means that like your body is ready to house a child. And it's not the same for the boys. The boys, they start producing sperm as soon as they're, I mean, when they're born. So yeah, they can easily impregnate someone from a very young age. But for the girls, yeah. So they do not know. What I see mostly is, yeah, most young people do not know when they can get pregnant.
Are they ever scared to ask questions, you know, believing that they'll get into trouble or that you might tell their parents?
No. Most of the time the teachers are excused and it's just us and the students. So the important thing is that we set an atmosphere that is open for them to talk about such issues, because we talk about it first. So when they like have like questions and all that, they feel free about asking and all that.
When you don't have these open conversations or education, where do you think young people get the information from?
Mostly from their peers, which is not always correct, because like their peers are just like them. They're not really well informed on issues and all that.
And young people these days are very active on social media and have access to internet. Yeah. What about the internet? Yeah. Is that helpful or are there risks?
Well, internet has like good and bad side to it. There are helpful information on the internet, while there are also harmful information about sexual reproductive health on the internet. So everything on the internet is not always accurate unless it's like a certified website.
What are the biggest misconceptions that young people have about sexual health?
I would say one of the main, like from my experience, the main misconception that young people have on sexual health is contraception with condoms. Most young people view that as for just for sex workers and not for like everyone. They see like as soon as you are associated or they see you with condoms, they think that, oh, you're someone who is like a sex worker or like a prostitute and all that. And for young girls, especially for like family planning, they think that family planning is just for like women who already had like a baby or two. What they don't understand is as soon as you start seeing your menstruation, as soon as your body is ready to like house a baby, you are eligible for family planning, which is the reason why we have a lot of like unplanned pregnancy and teenage pregnancy, young females dropping out of schools. We want every young woman to complete their education, and falling pregnant is one of the main things or one of the main issues that has caused our young girls to fall out of school.
What about the boys? What changes do you see when they have this kind of conversations in education?
It teaches the boys to be a lot more responsible, because we've had a lot of like boys just impregnating girls and then running away from it. It also teaches them that to look after their sexual health as well, because STIs are the signs and symptoms can be manifested in, some of them can be manifested in girls, but not in boys, and boys become like carrier and all that. So by educating them that, because most of the time when the girls come into the clinic for like STI check and all that, or they experience some symptoms, and when they come into the clinic, the boys are not with them, and their boyfriends mostly blamed them for having another sexual partner and all that, without realizing that they were the one who was the carrier for the virus and all that. So yeah, it teaches boys to basically be more responsible.
And as you said, teen pregnancy and sexually transmitted infections are a huge problem. So what more can be done to prevent this?
Well, first of all, there need to be an awareness and advocacy for family planning, especially to young girls. Every young girl should know that family planning is not only for married women, it's for everyone. And there shouldn't be stigma towards girls, young girls, even teenagers coming to clinics and health facilities to access family planning and also like STI treatment and all that. And what we have here is like a youth center that we deal with that. So most young adults feel free to come to our clinic, because it's only us like youths working there. It's more like a peer-to-peer, like we help each other out.
And for parents, grandparents and aunties, you know, it's what they say, it takes a village to raise, you know, children. Listening today, what advice do you have for them?
Like, we've all been through life, and seeing a young girl growing up and experiencing life, experiencing everything that life throws at her, we talk about like having like relationship and all that. I think we should be more understanding that, well, it's part of life, and we shouldn't be, because like in our culture, most aunties and are really judgmental of young girls growing up. And I think that is one of the things, that is something that we should really discourage now, instead of like being judgmental of the choices a young girl that makes, or relationships and all that. Instead of being judgmental, it would be more helpful if we provide like directions or advice, because like the older generation has gone through that and have more experience than young girls and all that. So instead of being judgmental, instead of just turning a blind eye, I think it's it would be more helpful if we actually like take our young girls in and we talk to them about issues like that, and we talk to them about our experiences going through life.
Great advice from Primrose Fomane. She's the youth nursing officer in charge of Papua New Guinea's Family Health Association. As well as misconceptions around pregnancy and family planning, if girls aren't taught about menstruation before their period begins, it can be terrifying when one day they see blood in the underpants. I've known girls who thought they were going to die because they didn't understand their body was going through a natural development. So how can we get better at talking about periods? Mary Kalsrap is from Mama's Life in Vanuatu. They started as a charity that provided women with reusable sanitary pads, but now they are teaching women and girls all about their cycles.
Puberty is very important because once a girl is growing up, she has to know what's happening in her body and the changes it's having in her body. And then after puberty, we have to talk about the body parts, like sexual reproductive health in women. They have to know every part of their body. And our next topic is menstruation. Menstruation means that they have to know when they're going to have their period and when the period stops. After menstruation, one of our topics too is calendar. Sometimes our young girls just don't know how to track their period. So one of our very important topics is using a calendar to track your period. They have to know how the body works and when to see the period and when it ends, and to keep track of what the body is. Because sometimes when a lady is menstruating, they don't know how the blood flows in the body. Because sometimes some of the girls that we went to tell them about menstruation, they told us that sometimes they can see the period more than 7 days. So every time we advise them that it's not a good sign. So any sign that you see in your period that you see that it's not normal, you have to go for a medical check.
When you talk to these kids, what are some of the biggest myths or misconceptions that you come across?
The biggest myth is that they didn't know even anything about the menstruation. They didn't even know how the body works. And some of the myths is that they, when they're in boarding schools, they didn't have enough finance to support them for the reusable sanitary pads, because parents only give them money for the stationery, but because menstruation is a monthly process, so that's some of the needs that they need. So when we went to schools to give out the product, we were very happy. And sometimes the parents came across us and told us that what we're doing, they really appreciate what Mama's Life is doing, because giving the kids prepares, it helps them.
Teen pregnancy, as we know, is one of the biggest consequences of this lack of education with our young people and kids. Yes. What impact does that have on young girls' future?
They will not have a bright future if they still have their goal to do. They still have something in front of them to achieve. If they were in school, they have then that's when it will impact their lives. What they're thinking of to do in future, they won't achieve what their goal is.
Do girls feel empowered when they are armed or well informed with the information that you teach them?
Of course. They are sometimes when after awareness, some of the girls came over to us and say, oh, thank you very much for your information. What we've learned, we will try to learn what you've told us. So for us to achieve something, we are very happy that you came over. It encouraged us, and you gave us information that when things happen, this is the danger thing, and this is what you do, you're not going to do.
And you are running this education and awareness program through Mama's Life. But what more can be done so kids are armed with the right information?
So what we do is we wanted to go on social media to encourage young mothers that if you have any daughters who is at the age of 11, 12, 15 upwards, it's a good time for you to tell her, make an awareness to her about what will be going on. You see, she comes to an age that she will menstruate, you have to help her. Because sometimes when some of the girls didn't learn anything about menstruation, once they menstruate, they just cried. they just think that they have something wrong in their bodies, or they have a very big sickness in their body. So when we go over to do the awareness and touch them, when they learn, oh, that's what I'll be expecting when I'm 11 to 15 years old. So it is normal. We want parents to look after their kids well, especially girls. When they started growing up, they have to respect them and teach them on how the body works.
Such important advice for parents, especially with daughters, to start talking early about how their bodies are going to change. That's Mary Kalsrap from Mama's Life in Vanuatu.
You're listening to Sisters Let's Talk on ABC Radio Australia.
Remember Hazel Sege, who told us earlier about how much her dad taught her about puberty and sex? Now Hazel works on the same sex education program in Papua New Guinea as Primrose Famane, who you also heard from earlier. But Hazel's lessons are mostly with boys.
They are really curious about the sexual reproductive health. It's really helpful to them, like many of them. Whenever I asked them questions, they told me that their parents never taught them about sexual reproductive health. And they used to ask me a lot of questions about body hygiene and development of sexual health and understanding the function of each body part. On this day, they used to ask me a lot of questions, and it's really helpful. Like, sometimes I ask them questions like, what will you do about what I taught you? And they used to tell me that. Most of the time we do disrespect girls, but then we realize that we have our mom. We should respect girls like how we respect our mothers. And it's quite interesting to them. They really enjoy whatever we taught in school, and they want to learn more.
That's a very important point you made about respecting their other girls like they respect their mom. How do you hope your lessons are shaping their attitudes to sex and respectful relationships?
Well, many of the boys, they always ask me for more. They always come back to me. They always ask me, like, about their girlfriends, like, how do I go about this and that? Whenever they have conflict with their girlfriends, they always ask me. And that's how I see that whatever I got, at least I have an impact on their life. I'm young just like them, but I act like I'm mature than them. The way I give them advice, I met their mom. Their mom told me that, oh, it's really a headache talking to these boys. And so I came in, I talked to them. They are behaving like, lately their mom told me that they are behaving and they are focused. They are now focusing in school and all this.
What an influence Hazel Sege is having in her classes, talking to boys not only about sexual health, but also how to respect their partners, just as well as they respect their mothers. Thanks to all my guests today, Hazel, Primrose Famane, Mary Kalsrap, and Dr. Renata Rem. I hope you've learned about the importance of sex education, because having these conversations with your children is not only good for them and your family, it will benefit the whole community. Thank you so much for joining me, Hilda Wayne, for Sisters Let's Talk on ABC Radio Australia, a weekly show by Pacific Islands Women for Pacific Islands Women, where we get together to talk about the issues that are important to us. If you've missed an episode of this show, catch up on our podcast. You can listen on the ABC Pacific website or on your favorite podcast app. If you've got a topic you'd like me to cover on the show or any feedback, I'd love to hear from you. Send me a message anytime at the ABC Pacific Facebook page or email sisters@abc.net.au. That is sisters@abc.net.au. Sisters Let's Talk is presented and produced by me, Hilda Wayne. Our supervising producer is Kim Lester. Executive producer is Inga Stunzner. Sisters Let's Talk is an ABC Radio Australia production. Mtasol na bungim you next time.
on your radio, phone and streaming online. This is ABC Radio Australia, yours in the Pacific.